Welcome to the ASU Sports Business Podcast. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the ASU Africa Sports Unified Podcast. We hope you're well, and good to be recording another episode today. I'm so happy to have, he's a leader, he's a pioneer, whatever word you want to use to describe, Guy Rathbone with us today as we talk about specific things and just what's happening in the sports space in Africa. Before we get into things, as usual, if you are yet to subscribe to our podcast, please do. We're available on Apple and Spotify, so please subscribe to that so you can get notifications of when we release new content. And also as well, if you are unaware, we have been doing for a while now our ASU community newsletters, which is a dedicated newsletter, a compilation of all the key news and insights within the Pan-African sports space. So again, if you are not subscribed to that, please do so. We share a lot of information about job opportunities, people who are moving around the job sector, acquisitions, sponsorships, all the key information that you need to stay afloat of what's happening, we share. So please do subscribe to that. But yeah, enough from me. I am just so keen to get into this and to just talk about our topical focus for today. But firstly, Gary, how have you been? How's everything going? I know you had some time at SABC and now you're doing wonderful things at Sportscape Media. But yeah, it's been a long time. You're looking good in the sunshine there, in the sunlight.
Well, it's actually going to winter here as well. But the thing about Johannesburg is that we get a lot of sunshine in our winter. So that's probably why.
I'm jealous.
It's a bit chilly. but thanks, Gary. Well, always great to chat to you. And as you were reminding me earlier, it's been a long road. We've been on to lots of chatting, as I said, starting in the Premier in Lewisham many years ago. So yeah, it's great that we're still talking because, look, the sports world, things keeps happening. How much of it has changed as well in that period? It has been exciting. You were asking about me. As you said, yeah, I was at the SABC. I was heading up sport for SABC over the past 2.5 years. It was quite a challenge in many, many ways, but I think it's something I believe quite strongly in, that free-to-air national broadcasters, free-to-air broadcasting, it's still the one thing that allows the most access to all sports fans, to sports content, and it's something that's really worthwhile getting right. And so it was a challenging space and a challenging time, particularly with the start of COVID, but it was something I believe in and I feel is worthwhile. But out of that now, and yeah, running my own consultancy, Sportscape Media.
Fantastic. And just as a little note to everyone listening, if you do hear some noise in the background, that's probably just my son making some noise, so excuse us for that. But no, Gary, let's just get straight into it. And of course, what we want to cover today is just some key things that have been happening within our space. And to start off, we want to talk about, movements or collaborations between Saudi Arabia and different bodies within the African football space, that be it with CAF. So when was this? Earlier in May, obviously CAF and Saudi Football Federation signed an MOU or 5-year agreement to help to develop football for both regions. Previously to that, they also signed an agreement with the Botswana Football Association as well, to develop women's football and competitions and arrange friendlies. And even at the end of last year, they as in the Saudi Football Federation, signed an agreement with the Ghanaian Football Federation for similar purposes to help to develop football in both regions. But I just want to get your thoughts in terms of the agreements between Saudi and let's start with CAF, for example, right? In terms of their whole aims and what you reckon, behind that,
if one considers the fact that CAF is such a vote-rich confederation in terms of the FIFA setup, it's never a surprise that everybody comes courting to Africa, basically, when it's looking for World Cups or looking for leadership at CAF and stuff in FIFA and things like that. And so in many levels, it's not a surprise to see the Saudis now making their play. They've been pushing a lot in sport lately, you know, not just in Africa, but, you know, the recent acquisition with Newcastle United and, of course, the LRV golf thing. Yeah, I mean, that's been – and that was an interesting – I don't think anyone saw that coming. Well, the way that ended the other – you know, with that tie-up now with the PGA. So they have been like looking at sport and, you know, I mean, they've got resources, they've got space, they've done a lot of things with the Italian Serie A. I think they do their Super Cup in Saudi Arabia as well. Yeah. You know, and look, I mean, the likes of Qatar and the UAE basically, Abu Dhabi got this ball rolling a while ago, you know, with Qatar and Paris Saint-Germain and Abu Dhabi with Manchester City and Barcelona and those kinds of things. So you know, we can understand the processes behind it. But I think the question we need to ask ourselves from an African sports point of view, and particularly African football point of view, I suppose, is, you know, is this a positive thing, you know, for football in Africa, and can it work? You know, I think that's the first key question. I mean, in my mind, when I look at it, I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are on that one.
It's a good question. I think, and as you mentioned, no, it's reported that Saudi Arabia will be trying or bidding for the 2030 World Cup. Hence, you know, in terms of engaging with CAF, and also they're hosting, I think, the 2027 Asian Games, and Botswana have applied for 2027 AFCON. My views on, as long as it's mutually beneficial, I think we have seen, we can name many occasions where maybe there's been an agreement entered into, but maybe Africa don't receive reciprocal benefits as maybe the other partner in such agreements. So we need to ensure that Africa is not just left on the side. So if that's money coming in, then make sure it's distributed across the whole pyramid within the football ecosystem in Africa, aligning with CAF goals, be it women in football or various competitions that they want to hold, and make sure it's actually going to the people and the organizations that need to actually grow and build sports. That's my main concern about that as well. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree, basically. I think that the way that it happens, the way that it rolls out, and the way that if it can be used to make an impact, you know, and make a difference, then I think that there's value in it. I mean, if you think about a lot of people, I mean, there's a huge element of sports washing going on here, where the Saudis are trying to kind of improve their image and getting into sport and taking that as a big, you know what I mean, to try and sort of say, look, we're going to be part of that space. I think it's a clever move actually as well with going to sport, because sport has a different set of dynamics to a lot of other things in the world. Yeah. And sure, people will say, well, you know what I mean, the issues of the government there and the ruling party in the way and the kinds of situations that exist in the ground make it, you know, you can say, well, that's a bit of it is problematic to a degree. But I think, and Qatar proved this as well, is that despite the problems that are there for sure at one level, but I do think that one has to look at it, you know, in a broader perspective. On one hand, you could say that, look, okay, every single cent that comes in has to only come in from, you know, something that's completely squeaky clean and absolutely, you know, without its issues. No one would get any investment in anything, basically, because it's no such thing. You know what I mean? Say, well, we're going to take money from the Saudis, we're going to take money from Total, who are, like, you know what I mean, obviously involved in environmental issues, basically. Yep. We're not going to take money from environmental guys. Okay, well, these guys are actually running sweatshops and things like that. And there's, like, you know what I mean? So that is an issue. You know, we've got to be realistic about that. Yeah. And the second point about it as well that I think is important here is that, you know, they have looked at, you know, I mean, a lot of this whole thing has moved into the European space. And if you look at the way that they've been, the investment there, in many ways, the investment isn't needed that much there. You can say, well, that is a purely kind of political move in a way. And it's almost when you say, well, you know, don't spend the money there. Spend it here. And if you can actually give it the right oversight and give it the right and make sure that it's actually used properly and has an impact in sort of changing, you know, improving African football, African sport, basically, in the correct way, then that, you know, I think that that can actually be a huge positive, because truly we do need investment in sport, but we need investment that, you know, one of the things that used to be said about the, you know, when you've got Western countries coming and saying, well, we'll give you aid, but we need an oversight on this. And you say, well, you go get it from Russia and China, they just give you the money, they don't worry about it. It sounds like a good idea, let them say, well, here's the money, you spend it as you like. But we know how that ends up, basically. It just,
there's always strings attached.
There needs to be strings attached. There needs to be say, okay, we're going to give it to you, but you need to, this is what needs to come out of it. And those strings are very important to ensure that things do change for the better and that everybody actually benefits from it and not just a few people at the top.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, you said a lot of things there, even with the sports washing. I mean, the news about LIV Golf and PGA that broke a few days before. So there's so much that we can talk about. And as you mentioned, it's, you know, you could get to like real detailed and nitpick in terms of where does money eventually come from. But I guess to maybe address the elephant in the room, of course, not confirmed, but with that partnership in particular with CAF, seeing that maybe a vehicle to help funds be much not spoken about, but as an elephant in the room, the African Super League. Which could be a driving force to kickstart that tournament. I know there was, you know, talk about how it will be revenue will be generated from it, and potentially this could be an avenue for that. But I think when the ESL kicked off, there was a huge foray about it. Obviously, they materialized. Juventus recently pulled out, so I think it's just left with Real Madrid and Barcelona. Yeah, and they have their own issues going on at the moment. Yeah. And so people maybe take that model. And then when the news of the African Super League, you know, broke about come to fruition, a lot of people are like, no, it won't work, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Again, this is just pure speculation. We're still in the news, but I just want to, you know, get your thoughts on that.
And, yeah, I agree. I think this is an interesting discussion because it is, I mean, and good to get your takes on this as well, because it is an interesting discussion because there is that controversy attached to this idea of this African Super League, well, of a Super League concept that was kind of shot down in flames in Europe. And I think in many ways, rightly so, because again, it talks to what I was saying earlier on about you know, where money needs to be spent. And you've got to say to yourself, do those clubs in Europe really need more money? Or you know what I mean? If they're actually running out of money, if Real Madrid and Barcelona can't afford to keep themselves afloat, maybe the problem isn't that they actually they can't really plead a case of poverty. It's just been misspent and they're not spending their money correctly. There are teams out there, top teams in European football that are actually doing fairly well. And managing to do fairly well within their means, and they don't really need a Super League for that. There's no point in creating something in that way. The situation for me on the continent in Africa here is very, very different to me, because I think that we do need something that can actually raise the best of African football up onto a pedestal, up onto a platform that everybody can start appreciating African football, you know, the best of it, basically. We haven't actually even, you know, we've got great football, we've got a lot of great talent, and we've got a lot of great value here, but we're not getting anywhere with it in the current model as it is. The Champions League as such as it exists within the African, within the CAF context, it's great tournament as all Champions League type tournaments are, but really it hasn't moved anything forward in the last sort of decade or so as far as African football. Have we got a better spread of things? Has it got any better in any way? And I would argue that actually, no, it's as good as it's going to get. But we need African football to get better. And I think that in this instance, the idea of the Super League actually makes complete sense. And particularly now, again, we're talking about with the Saudi money coming in, what it does, it means not only does it mean that it becomes a tournament of, because we know what fans are like, big tournaments with lots of money in them, that excites people, basically. No one's going to turn out to watch, you know, a cup. I mean, if you even look like you can get two big teams and they'll play a friendly, it'll never get the same kind of interest and attraction as you get two big teams playing a hugely competitive tournament against like other big teams that are in there with a huge mm-hmm. amount of money involved at stake. That's, you know what I mean? That excites people. So it is going to make a huge difference in that respect. But the other part about it is because of the Saudi money coming in is to make sure that, you know, because that's the whole thing. Super League can attract that money in, mm-hmm. brings the money into the thing. Then we got to make sure that it doesn't sit in the Super League, basically, yeah. but that Super League gets what it needs to make it exciting and make it brilliant and make it a fantastic competition that people would watch on their televisions in the UK, in the US, in mm-hmm. China, in Australia, whatever like that, because of the standard of the football that they'll see and the quality of the production and the experience.
Yeah.
Make sure it does it, but that the rest of that money then does feed down into the clubs below mm-hmm. that to start building up the next layer of talent, and then making sure that the best players on our continent could get the opportunity to stay in Africa, playing for top clubs, making good money, getting exposure, not so they can be sold, so that when their national teams go to World Cups and things like that, these guys are already heroes in their own right, basically. That they yeah. shouldn't go to Europe, not just to make money, but they shouldn't have to go to Europe to become heroes. We need to make them heroes here. And something like the African Super League is a chance to do exactly that, create heroes out of players based at local teams.
I agree. I think even from a basic economic model of supply and demand, and again, this is all caveating, of course, you know, full information is not out yet, but going back to that, as you said, if the money from the Super League goes out to the wider football ecosystem and pyramid, then that's fantastic.
Yeah.
If it stays within the select few that are able to participate in the competition, then, you know, it won't really have much competitive balance because the resources won't fall to the other teams. And so the gap between the best and the others will just continue to increase. Although in the sense for that elite league will be great, but to actually drive and develop sports and content, I think we need a holistic view on things. So going back to your point, it's definitely needed. But I do think, you know, if you create a viable product with great, and don't get me wrong, even now with the CAF Champions League, the first leg I watched between Al Ahly and Wydad, it was fantastic.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah.
We just need to give them
it's a brilliant tournament.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, to give on the platform so there's increased demand, people can watch it, and then those other cogs needed in the wheel will come, you know, sponsors, the global audits, etc. And I think if that is the case in the essence for their Super League, then I think it will work. Even there's a slight precedence as well for maybe how you mentioned about global, which is definitely your forte, but audiences and media and broadcasting, we can maybe have a look at the last AFCON that was done and how CAF managed to get all these media rights with England, Europe, Asia as well. So if you have that same model, giving exposure to the potential African Super League, then I think, you know, positives, or it can be used as a good platform to then build and grow sports or football in particular on the continent.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's me, because if you think about what you're really doing here is you're distilling the best on the continent into one tournament, basically. So if you're taking that outside of the continent and taking it to Europe, to the UK, to the US and Asia and places like in South America, then it becomes a very attractive proposition for broadcasters in those countries to have it, because people will watch that because they are seeing, you know, the best of it, and it's concentrated and you know, with a good production, because if it has the money to have a good, you know, it's a good experience on television, then it's going to do wonders for the game on the continent. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
And you even mentioned about, you know, with actual players, if they're going over to Europe or to different areas, etc. I mean, when we started talking about Saudi Arabia, recently Messi announcing that he's going into Miami. I'm not saying this should be the build or end all, but, you know, what if, or have we envisioned a possibility where an African club can be doing the same, where these stars are going to them? I'm not saying it's a be all or end all, but that would be a huge shift.
Absolutely. You can see that. I mean, you know, when you create a thing like the Super League like that, where there is that kind of money in, you know, so maybe it's not a Messi or a Ronaldo or a Benzema, but there's, you know what I mean? You know, top players from Europe would probably look at the opportunity to come play at great stadiums and come in great crowds with really, really good teams. Yeah. And you know, that would actually just help feed the, you know, change the narrative, I think, about what African football is about. African football is not just this like resource producing thing for everyone else, but suddenly we can start affording players that are household names elsewhere to come to the continent.
Yeah, I definitely say that as well, because I know firsthand a lot of African players, African descent, who are playing in Europe or wherever. They're always keen and they're always still attached with what's going on back in Africa in their home country. And I definitely agree that there won't be any like hesitation if there's a viable product and then, you know, going back to play for a team in African Super League or just a team within the pyramid. But also as well, as you mentioned, I think maybe a few years back, this was, I had a bit of a gripe with this, but now, you know, I fully understand. If a young player from Africa wants to go to Europe, that is fantastic. There's nothing against them. You know, Europe has a great model of stability. But if, as I've always said, if Africa builds, as you said to me all those years back, you know, build it and they will come. If Africa can grow a viable product, it will definitely attract and maybe, you know, a young player's dream won't be to go to Europe. It could be like, oh, I want to play for Al Ahly or Wydad or whatever. You know, they maybe stay in that ecosystem longer and money will then begin to trickle or stay in the African football pyramid much longer, which will benefit everyone in that pyramid.
I was having a conversation with somebody else the other night and again talking about that, you know, if you build it, they will come. And I said, that's great, but there's actually a rider you've got to put on there. If you build it good, all come, basically. And that's the thing. You know, it's not a matter of we'll just build any old thing, they'll come. And that's why, again, I think things like the Super League could work. But I also think it brings us on to the other interesting thing that I also picked up the other day, which I saw a story regarding Saudi saying they've actually now had enough of actually looking to. So then, you know, after they did the deal with Newcastle and everything and the investment that they made, and they said, well, actually, enough of this, basically. We're tired of actually, we don't want to actually build. I mean, obviously, certainly the European teams. I can see the African thing still being, and I can see the connection between Africa and Saudi basically getting stronger in that respect. But they're saying, well, we're actually going to keep our money here, and we're going to start building our own league and acquiring players like the likes of Ronaldo and Benzema and players like that coming into that league, and you can see what the ambition is. I mean, I think that could be. I think that's quite an astute step as well. Because then they're not seen totally as a kind of colonizing force, as it were, but a force that's actually saying, okay, well, let's do something here as well. Let's build on what we have. I mean, what do you think about that? I mean, you think that's a positive?
Yes, I do. And of course, taking it to this African perspective, I think in order to safeguard and develop sport long term, you need to start from the ground up. And so if you have these players coming in to help develop and build sports, you know, in the short term there'll be a lot more media attention, but also long term the impact that has on the younger generation, looking at your Ronaldo coming, or imagine a Pogba coming to play for a team in Africa. European eyes will just be like, wow, what's going on here? So I think definitely that model, again, not in isolation, but that model can definitely work in terms of enticing players to come back. And also, as you said, you know, building what Africa has and building that up and focusing on that and nurturing that and giving that time. I think that will be a very important aspect in part of a bigger strategy sort of thing. Yeah, I think that can definitely work for sure.
I think in that respect, you know, as well, I think the Saudi-Africa connection makes actually quite good sense, both for the Saudi football and then for African football. Because the one thing that we do have on the continent is we've got we've got a continent full of football mad people, basically. Football has an incredible incredible hold on the imagination of people right across the continent. We've got the fan base, we've got the players, we've got the talent, you know, we've got such a great football culture here. And again, this is another thing, it's not, you know, people don't fully appreciate it. Everybody looks at it at the sort of the African football thing, and it's always like this cute things about people playing on these pitches with the Giocali balls and these goalposts made out of sticks and goats walking across the pitch and all that kind of thing. And you're gonna say, well, actually, you know, it's all very, very well, but we can do better than that, and we are better than that, and we can, you know what I mean, we should be, and these are opportunities to do that. And then you go over to the Saudi side where they've got these brilliant stadiums and they've got all these pitches and they've got all this money, but their fan base is like, you know, negligible, yeah, basically. You know, yeah, they don't have that kind of, they don't have football culture that, yeah, that the other countries have. And I think that a kind of relationship in a sense between the two, where, you know what I mean, there's a lot that Saudi Arabia can actually probably learn from our continent about football culture, about fan culture, about support and passion and building that, you know what I mean? And there's a lot that we can benefit from that in terms of the kind of input from financial input that we would get into building the yeah, infrastructure and resources that we need. And that way, both, you know, both football in Saudi Arabia and football in Africa, you know, we kind of raise each other. It's the old saying, you know, the same tide floats, all boats rise, yeah, on the same tide, basically.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
and their need for things and our need for things that they can coexist in that kind of way. So, mm-hmm, you know, you can see that would be a positive if they're looking at changing their focusing. Okay, let's do more to build what we've got at home, that they would look less so on what they're going to sort of have to do any sports wash in Europe, as it were,
yeah,
and look to rather than as a sports wash thing, but a mutual cooperation agreements that helps, you know, between two areas that both have something the other one needs, and yeah, and working together to lift both up equally.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And that's what I was mentioning about, you know, these players coming in, et cetera. It's part of a wider strategy. So you need to invest in the infrastructure, facilities, state-of-the-art facilities, all that kind of stuff to make a viable product. And I definitely think, you know, the World Cup can't be understated with how Saudi Arabia performed, even just their playing style,
yeah,
the passion that we saw. It really put a lot of people's
attention,
yeah,
level, yeah,
yeah, a little bit of attention. So
if I'm not mistaken, my memory being, and I am getting old now, but if I'm not mistaken, like the first time I saw Saudi qualified for the World Cup in 1990, Italia 90, I'm sure I think the Saudis, it was the first time they qualified, but they did qualify. And I remember that team at that tournament, if I think, as I said, I'm sure somebody's watching or listening to the podcast and saying, I know you got it all wrong. I'm going to have to go and check it up on Google later to make sure if I can get it right. But I remember that side actually being pretty impressive. Now, I got a funny feeling they almost just fell short in making it into the next round, but they were a good side. So they've got, you know what I mean, there is something there already, basically, you know what I mean. And as you say, at Qatar, they played, you know what I mean, they weren't a bad side, and they've yeah, got a lot of potential too. Yeah. So there's a lot for them to build on there.
No, I completely agree. It is very exciting, to be honest with you. And I think, so as you mentioned before, the relation between Saudi and Africa, I think it's a good relationship as well, in terms of, you know, they're maybe not as mature as the European market. And so there's a lot more room and opportunities to grow and innovate and develop, because they are at similar stages in the development of football. Learning from each other in terms of those agreements could, you know, if we wait to see, could be quite smart and more mutually beneficial in terms of how it can be used. So yeah, very much looking forward and excited to see what comes of all of these partnerships that Saudi are making with CAF and other African football federations. But yeah, exciting times ahead as well, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that it is. I mean, there's so many things that have happened lately that have changed things. And certainly, I think the World Cup in Qatar has certainly made things, you know, as given people a different perspective on things. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of pans out.
Yeah. I was even going to, I know we're talking about, we touched on it, African Super League and just the partnerships between Saudi Arabia and CAF and other football federations. You know, I think it was a good opportunity to talk about recently concluded, yeah, like Basketball Africa League Season 3 concluded.
I knew there was something that, yes, yeah, exactly. That was the other thing we were going to discuss, which is one of the most exciting things to happen on the continent for a while as well, basically.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's been so far a fantastic, first of all, it's been fantastic as a source of entertainment, as a sport, even as a case study as well, in terms of the format. We're talking about a super similar format in terms of drafts and teams and franchises, etc., in different regions, in Dakar, in Cairo, and in the finals in Kigali. But I think it's been such a great, a great spectacle in terms of what can be done in Africa, not just in terms of the sporting talent as well, but again, the whole ecosystem. We see the infrastructure that's been built. We see fans attend, great atmospheres. Okay, albeit, you know, there was a great attendance rate in Kigali for the finals, of course, and I'm sure the others can build on that. But as a primary case study,
I'm glad to see a South African team actually making it in there as well, basically.
And
again, so that was very good for us.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, African focus in terms of the teams and that the players. Of course, there are a few players from the USA have come over as well, but I think it's been a viable product, and I think it's a case study to everyone, government, stakeholders, sponsors, that if you spend enough time doing your due diligence and your research and understand the market, then you can develop a viable product that is a success.
Well, I think it's also very, very clever from the NBA's point of view. I mean, we have that NBA rights, you know, the NBA is available on in Africa to watch. And we know that there's a lot of popularity for it in certain countries where basketball is incredibly popular already. So there's a huge fan base and interest in it, and you know that, and it is such a, you know, quite a rapidly growing sport on the continent, which is and it certainly is an exciting and engaging product. And for the NBA to say okay, because the problem we always have with these things, particularly with American sports, the whole time zone issue, you know. So if you're an NBA fan, you'd be really diehard. You have to get up and, you know, I mean, we don't mind getting and watching the occasional cricket match in Australia at 2 o'clock in the morning, or a World Cup, you know what I mean, for a couple of weeks, and there's a couple of games you might have to get up for early like that. But to watch a whole tournament every week, every Saturday or Sunday or Monday or Friday, whenever it is, you're having to get up at like the early hours of the morning or stay up late or whatever the case may be to kind of watch that. And to say, well, rather than saying, you know, well, let's, you know, the way I look at what Amadou Fall and John and the team have done there, basically, is, and they've done a fantastic job. I mean, they really have been incredibly brilliant custodians of basketball in Africa. And say, so let's bring the NBA to Africa, basically, and let's set up an NBA, take the NBA approach and build that model, basically, on the continent in that way. And I'm so glad that it actually has been as successful as it is. And given this is just the third edition now that we've just had, it's got a long way to go. And I could see this becoming a major part of the African sporting calendar in the coming years.
Yeah, definitely. And as I mentioned, you know, we spoke about, or you mentioned earlier about changing the narrative and perception. I think this definitely has done it and continues to do it. In terms of how it's, just that, how it's changed narratives. And not just, you know, oh, it's great entertainment, but just thinking holistically and actually, you know, building economies and adding, generating, creating jobs. It's definitely done that across all three different conferences that it has. It's huge. And again, like I said, we've seen infrastructure developed as well in these countries that they are in. We've seen competitions as well from teams that want to enter the Basketball Africa League, all of that. And it's just good for the whole ecosystem because there's competition, it's healthy, money's flowing around, etc. So they're still very young, still a long way to go, but so far it's been good.
But I mean, that competitiveness and wanting to get into it, I mean, look at South Africa. South Africa didn't have a team in the first two seasons, basically, and the Cape Town Tigers finally got the quad. So that is, and there was a lot of excitement from back in this end when they were getting into that tournament, and the media coverage of it here, you know, it was very, very positive and for them to be in there. And it is, you know, it really is helping to build the game, because if you take a country like South Africa where, you know, basketball, I mean, a lot of people play basketball and they like it, but it's nowhere near the popularity of football or rugby or cricket and things like that. But the growth potential is huge. And so for a team like that to kind of get into that space and start, you know, playing at that level, now playing against, you know, it encourages new fans and new audiences and because the time zones are right and it all sets up, you can get more people watching it. Yeah. You know, Kigali is not it's not difficult to get there. Basically, it's not too expensive to get there. It's in reach. Fans are wanting to go there and be part of the experience. So it's great that it's doing that. And so you've got the traditional teams, the countries where basketball does do well, the Angolas, the Nigerias, the Egypts and things like that, and Morocco. And then you've got, you know what I mean, and then you get teams, you know, the other teams coming in, you know, Congo, I suppose, as well, DRC, but you've got the South Africans coming in. And that's great because that's really going to help, I think, open up the game. But what is interesting is that when it comes to winning these things, it seems like it doesn't matter what sport we throw at any sport with a ball we throw onto the continent, it looks like I'll actually win them every time.
Yeah, honestly,
it doesn't really matter.
They're great. They really mutant.
You know what I mean? Their sports culture there that club is really fantastic. You know, I think they've done over the years, they've really built one hell of a thing. If it's got a ball in it, give it to Al-Ahly and they're going to win it, whatever it is, basically.
Yeah, I even like that. That could be a topic for another day because I even like their whole model of how they do it, like in North Africa. It's very great.
They've got that big club. So you know what it is. It's not just a football team. It's a club. It's a sports club.
Whole membership.
You know, I used to spend quite a bit of time in Egypt and in my old days with the African Soccer Show and the CAF African Player of the Year, the CAF Player of the Year Awards when we originally created and set that up for CAF, and going to the clubs, you know, at Zamalek and Al Ahly, but particularly Al Ahly is amazing. They're like really big sporting clubs. You go there and there's squash and there's tennis and there's handball and then there's hockey and then there's, and everybody's there. And then when they're not playing that sport, they're at the clubhouses and they're sitting around. They will come there. They watch the football. They used to watch the EPL or the Spanish La Liga and stuff like that. Go there and watch the games at the club. Everybody would get together. They're really big institutions, huge institutions in the cultural life of that city, the city that these clubs are part of. And it really makes a hell of an impact. You know, we'd like to be good to see more teams taking up that model, around the continent. We say, well, why can't a Mamelodi Sundowns or an Enyimba or a AFC Leopards or whatever, take their football thing and use it to expand and create a sports culture for other sports around in their complexes and create proper sports clubs that are not just about going to watch the game every second at home, every second weekend, but are actually about where people come and engage in a sporting culture as part of their social life within those particular cities.
Yeah, I think it's great. And another point I even want to mention actually on just the basketball African League, and some people may just think, oh, amazing, NBA coming in, etc., which is good, but they've been involved in content for around 10 years or so. Basketball without borders, and then you have Giants of Africa as well, and they are going around implementing basketball courts. I think they have an ambition to implement 100 basketball courts across Africa. Yeah. And again, thinking holistically to really safeguard a sport, you need to start at the grassroots, really engaging in those communities, bringing the sport closer to them, because then when it's closer to them, they can participate, they can learn, there's more interest, etc. So if it might not be on the court or on the field, maybe opportunity outside, they'll be involved, but it definitely helps to spread basketball across the continent.
But maybe that's the strategy there could be that, you know, if you say, okay, if you take like the NBA and coming in the Afro ball and Afro basket and as you say, all the other things. If they had to set up these things, say to them, okay, let's partner with existing major clubs. So everybody knows that, like, you know, across the continent, the first sport, the number one sporting focus is the football club. And say, okay, let's go to those football clubs. Let's say take But maybe they could take, I was going to say they could take a leaf out of the African Super League thing and say, well, you know, those clubs, but half of those clubs, if you think about it, really do have them. But the other half, there'd be an opportunity at the teams like Sundowns and Yimba Simba, for example, you know, why not? You know, why not go to them and say, okay, guys, let's invest. We want to put up a basketball center here at your club. And we need to be the, you know, Simba basketball club team, basically. And, you know, and bring fans in Tanzania or in Dar es Salaam that are fans of Simba that like basketball. Come play your basketball here. Come be part of the club. And suddenly, and then, you know, you can see how other sports come and do that, where there's other interest of other types of sports that want to come into those clubs and set them up around the existing football club. Because then you're already tapping into a fan base. Yeah. You're already tapping into an infrastructure that exists. And you're just bringing something that adding to that and making it richer and making it broader. I don't know. That could be one way to kind of as the next step forward. You know,
yeah, might be something really
to look at. I mean, look, the Cape Town Tigers, they should actually then say tie in with, you know, one of the, you know, whether it's a, I don't know the Cape Town teams that are doing that well as the old Ajax, Cape Town Ajax and the like, but still, you know what I mean? Find a team a local team and tie in with that and partner with them and help build that culture. You know,
thank you so much, Gary. This is not a one-off. We'll be doing more regular content about what's happening in sport and the open up in sport, especially in general. But no, Gary, thank you so much for your time. And if anyone listening to specific topics or anything, just let us know. Reach out to us. We're accessible. But thank you again, Gary, for your time. And thanks to everyone that's listening. And I guess let's see what happens with Saudi, CAF, Africa Super League, and what's in the future for the Basketball Africa League. So thank you and take care.